Well, this morning here, Sunday morning, what is this, August the
3rd,
3rd, 1986, we're happy to be talking with Hal Myers and begin thinking a little bit about Camp Kewaunee and the history and people that have made all this possible. And Hal, I think maybe to start out with, I'll ask you maybe to share with us a few of your reminiscences of the earliest reminiscences you have of being involved with Camp Kewaunee.
Fine. We came here first as a family in 1929. My dad had met Raymond Frank in some kind of a choir affair. They both were singers, as you know. Dad sang, and so did Raymond, and I think they got together in northern New Jersey at some kind of a choir gathering or some such affair as that. And Raymond and my dad got talking. And during the conversation, it came out that as a kid, I was asthmatic, and my dad was looking for a place to cure asthma or what would help it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know what Raymond said, well, Maine is asthma free.
Right.
And that's all my dad had to hear, I guess. Yeah. So the following summer, 1929, he had 2 weeks, and the whole family drove up here. And also recommended by their choir director, their church choir director, James Doolittle. His son later came here, too.
I remember the name Doolittle.
And in 1929, we followed the Doolittles up all the way from New Jersey. It was a hard trip. But we stayed here at one of the cabins in the inn. The inn itself is not here. None of these newer cabins.
But the other cabins were.
Yeah, but far one is where we stayed. I don't know what the number is, but it's right the farthest north of the cabins, way over here. And we went across the road to what was then Pine Lodge for our meals. And it was at that time that we met Mrs. Ross Miller, who was running the dining room over there.
I didn't know that.
At that time. And we ate our meals there and would come back to the cabin here, and went swimming over under what we then called, and still do, not always accurately, the Inn Beach, where we swam, things like that. But that was our first introduction to Weld. And we only here 2 weeks. Dad only had that long vacation. But we liked it so much, we resolved to come back. Well, in 30, my dad's father died right in the end of June, and one thing or another, we didn't get here at all.
I see.
But in 31, Dad enrolled me for the last half of the season at Camp Kewaunee. And so I was in the Moose Lodge that year.
Moose Lodge.
My old friend Jimmy Doolittle had been here for the whole season, so I had some friend waiting for me here.
Well,
otherwise,
important.
I was pretty alone. I took the train out of Grand Central Station, I remember. Got on the berth, you know.
I would say.
To Portland and changed to the Boston or to the Main Central.
You'd have been about 12 or 13 then.
So I was 13 at the time. Had the last half season in the Moose Lodge, and a man by the name of Kent Morse was our counselor.
Kent Morse.
And some of the guys in the lodge were Jimmy Doolittle, Clinton Meserole.
The Meserole, and I remember that.
Yeah, and I might be able to think of some others as we go along. It was, I certainly got a great deal out of that month. At that time, it was an 8-week camp.
Yes, right.
So that was the basis of the first year of making friends and getting acquainted.
So then you were here for a sequence of years?
Yes. So then we came back in 32, and I was only a week late that year, and again I came up on the train with another friend. I think his last name was Benedict, but I wouldn't be sure about that. And we were then in the Lynx Lodge, so I had 7 out of the 8 weeks that year. And then again in 33. Incidentally, our counselor in the Lynx Lodge that year was Bill Deal.
Oh, yes. Yes,
I knew. He was from Ohio, and he played football for Ohio State. Of course, we thought he was absolutely the greatest guy that ever walked across the earth.
Sure.
And I remember him very well. And incidentally, too, I now know his widow in Columbus. I never knew her before. She still lives.
Interesting.
And we recall Kewaunee days.
She must be in her mid-80s.
She's getting along in years. And his son, Bill Deal, died during this past year, and I had the funeral a few times.
Oh, my heavens. I knew Bill. Yeah, he was younger than I think.
Yes, I think possibly so. I think he was in his mid-40s when he died.
Mid-40s, you see, I'm mid-50s.
Well, I may be wrong.
Right, well, I think you're not far, because I knew he was younger than I by at least 5 years.
Yeah.
Was it a heart problem?
Well, yeah, it was a complication of things.
Hmm.
And he hadn't been well for some time.
I see.
But they lived two doors from Judy and Chuck Hoffine, my daughter,
right
there
excellent.
On Caroline Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, he was our senior counselor that year.
Mm.
Thought he was just great. His father, that is, the
mm-hmm.
football player.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
33, I was here again in the Lynx Lodge. And I think George Tittman was our counselor.
Oh, yes.
You remember George Tittman?
The name comes back to me. I don't know whether I was actually here or whether it was from getting the mailings out, you know, there in the early, mid-40s, but the name Tittman comes to me.
Oh, he was one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people who stand out during those years are people like him.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Weld,
areas that they were involved in? Do you recall whether...
No, that would be hard.
Uh-huh.
I don't recall exactly. I think Bill Weld had tennis.
Uh-huh.
Oddly enough, I can't remember what George Tittman is responsible
uh-huh.
for. Bill Deal, I think, was very active in swimming. I think he had a lot of swimming
uh-huh.
duties,
uh-huh.
coaching swimming, things like that.
That's kind of interesting. Of course, some of the activities, as we were reminded last night at the campfire, are new, you know.
Oh,
and
yes.
Of course,
things
extend
we didn't have then.
Soccer and, you know, other kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it's good to know, of course, we've always had sailing, I guess, pretty much along the line, haven't we? Wasn't that one of GR's popular
sure.
areas and those? And, of course, the rifle range
yeah.
and so forth. We were talking about Howell Wendell, for instance,
yes.
Being on there. And I believe maybe Bob Corey, whom I interviewed just a few days ago, I think mentioned maybe someone who predated Howell Wendell on the
range.
Oh,
I think that was Rafe Marshall.
I think
Rafe
that
Marshall
there
had range in those days, and
right.
I'm sure he taught me how to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
It was later that I assisted Howell Wendell on the range. When I was a junior counselor, one of my jobs was range assistant.
Uh-huh.
And that must have been 36. That was 36.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or 5, I'm not sure, right in there.
Uh-huh.
And I was here for the full season in 33, as I said. That's when Tittman was counselor. And did the usual things.
Mm-hmm.
Got what we then called junior life saving and all that kind
mm-hmm.
of, you know.
Got your levels and
except they didn't have levels.
Oh, they didn't.
No, we had to work for an emblem. And
I
in
see.
Fact, in 1932, I did get my emblem.
Uh-huh.
I think you had to get 100 points or something like that. And you got points for all the different things. You had to do a 7-mile hike and all this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the difficulty with the emblem was you didn't know if you're going to get anything. Till the end of the time. You got your 100
oh.
points, you got the letter. If you got 99 points,
oh,
you spent the whole summer with nothing to show for it. I tell you, we got pretty frantic toward the end of that season.
Yeah.
But I did get my emblem. That was 32. Big K, you know, I wore it
yes,
around
I
school
saw
the next
those.
Year.
I wondered how you got those. I've seen them, you know, on some of the old shirts, some of the pictures, you know, the big mass pictures, and
well,
I wonder how you ever got those.
Well, those were just the uniform case.
Oh, I see.
But these were letters that you were handed out at the banquet and
I
sewed
see.
It on whatever
oh.
sweater you had when you
uh-huh.
got home,
terrific.
Something like that.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, those were those years. 34, I didn't make it. I had
uh-huh.
a serious operation in June, I think it was, uh-huh. that year, and the doctor advised me not to come to camp.
Nice.
But the family came up here again. Again, I think we had that cabin way down there at the end,
uh-huh.
and we were here for 2 or 3 weeks. But I didn't get into camp, although I was over there a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
35 is my first year as a junior counselor. And again, I hope my memory's right. By odd coincidence, I was junior counselor again of the Lynx Lodge. The Lynx
oh,
Lodge and
uh-huh.
I have been very much.
yeah.
Now, that year, I think also George Tittman was the senior counselor. So
uh-huh.
I had him both as a boy a counselor
right.
and as junior counselor.
Oh, that's a nice arrangement if you can do that.
Especially the guy like him.
Yeah. Oh, that was
among
terrific.
Others.
I
had
imagine you were really very pleased.
Sons. He was a great fellow. He became later a physical clergyman.
Oh, he did?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So that was 35,
mm-hmm.
and that may have been when I assisted on the range. I honestly don't remember what my job was that year other than
mm-hmm.
junior counselor or master camper, I guess, with a junior council responsibility.
Yes, that's another thing which make, because you've been so closely associated with the campus, or the camp in the 40s and 50s and on through, George Corey suggested that there was a point in his career where there were no master campers. And I'm wondering whether you went right from being an older camper into a junior counselor position.
Well, in my case, I think I did.
Uh-huh.
Again, I'd been out the 34 year,
uh-huh.
so I was a year older anyway. And I probably would have been in the Wildcat Lodge if uh-huh. I'd been a camper in 34. But uh-huh. as I say, I didn't make it that year. 35, I was in the lodge as a junior counselor.
Very good.
And 36, I was a junior counselor. That year, I was in the Wildcat. Finally got out of the way. I was in the Wildcat, and the senior counselor that year was Stu Smith, who was he was studying for medicine. I don't know just what point he was in his career, but I think he was getting ready for an internship the following fall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Stu Smith, he was counselor of the Wildcat Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
That was the year he drove me home to New Jersey.
Oh.
He had an old Ford, I think it was one step above a Model T.
Mm-hmm.
And he was called Helen. The last name was Damnation. So we drove home in Helen Damnation. Wild trip.
Well, anyway, I can imagine you really enjoyed that, because I
yeah.
took some boys from Ohio, brought them up here, and then I would plan sometimes even go down through New York City, and we'd see a play and
yes.
do some see some historical sites in New York City.
Right.
Back in the 50s when I was single and 40s, so at least the late 40s. Actually, I was I couldn't have done it much before 50, but anyway,
yeah.
I did start coming up the car in 50.
Well, this would have been 36, and I think the folks had come and gone by that time. There's no
mm-hmm.
way for me to get home unless I could scrounge a ride.
Oh, I enjoyed
worked it.
Worked
it out with Stu. I think they may have paid him mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. to take them around about trip. I'm not sure he was from New Jersey, but in mm-hmm. any case, he drove me home. But it worked out very nicely.
Yeah.
That was the Wildcat year, and I enjoyed that very much. And I think then I was involved to some degree in athletics and
mm-hmm.
baseball, and that could have been the range year. That's, I'm sorry I can't tell you whether it was 35 or 36 on the range.
Oh, that's fine. No, that's
also, I think I helped out in dramatics. We had a fellow named Whit Murphy doing
mm-hmm.
dramatics.
Oh.
In those days, we had a show night every week,
mm-hmm.
and Raymond helped work up a little orchestra, and we usually
mm-hmm.
put on a one-act play, and then there were a lodge stunt or two, and
yes.
every Thursday.
Terrific, yes. That, I just got on the end of that in the
yep.
early to mid-40s. They were still doing that, but then when the movies started coming near
yes.
the end of the 40s,
James Bradley.
It kind of discouraged that, although we continue some of that.
Yeah. Well, now they do have a stunt night at least
mm-hmm.
once a season when every lodge puts on a stunt. Or a skit of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's better than none at all. But we really worked out one-act plays in which kids learn lines, we did scenery and everything else. It was pretty serious dramatic.
Well, when did you pick up your drum interest? Were you doing that at that time?
Yeah,
or?
Some.
Uh-huh.
Some. And then I got interested in drumming more with organized groups. So
uh-huh.
when I went to Princeton, I joined the Princeton Tigers, which is a dance band.
Oh,
and
I see.
We used to play jobs around
mm-hmm,
and help
mm-hmm.
do a little income for me, you know.
Sure.
And so, again, it was George Tippmann, who was very, very much in the middle of forming a little orchestra. This may have been about 38 now,
mm-hmm.
something like that, which we call the Swing Seven.
Oh.
And he played a beautiful trumpet. And I did the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow named Ralph Hurd, I think, mm-hmm. played piano.
I've heard that name. I can't play
yeah.
it. Right.
And there were two Sheber brothers, Don, and I think the other one's name was Hillis.
Hmm.
Don played a tuba, and I think Hillis, I forget, he played guitar, maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we had two boys from Washington, New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
high school, Tom DeVoe and Coral Hance. They both played sax, alto and tenor sax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got the seven of us together, and I tell you, it wasn't bad.
Oh,
it was pretty good.
Yes,
we really,
I can imagine.
We had a lot of fun on our own. Then we'd always play for show night.
Sure.
Like that. Seemed to me we even
terrific.
Played one night for a dance for Kenny Olathe.
Mm-hmm.
That was sometime back in Hack Kenny Olathe.
Oh boy, that.
So we did that in 38, 39,
mm-hmm.
and. think the camp owned the drums too. I think they're a camp.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I ever brought mine up.
I know when you played for us later, after I guess after seminary,
oh,
and you
yes,
had
I'd
your
come back and do a show
your
night
church
once in, a while.
In
yeah.
Springfield.
Yes.
Right. You would do a show sometimes, and then of course you also, of course, did the Vespers from time to time. Well, you knew Walt, and that Walt I know was Walt Estabrook was in camp around 38, certainly.
Yes.
So
oh, before that, we were contemporaries.
Oh, uh-huh.
All the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Except he didn't come quite as many years as I did, but I think in 32, 33, 34, through there.
Seems you knew Walt.
Give or take a year.
Mm-hmm.
We were contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
We graduated the same year from college.
Uh-huh.
We were class of 40 at our respective schools.
Mm-hmm.
So he and I are exact contemporaries.
I see.
Well, and some of the early pictures, you'll see Walter standing there along with
mm-hmm.
me,
mm-hmm.
the days when I had hair.
Mm-hmm.
As my daughter said one time, Daddy, you had your other head on.
That's cute.
Well, anyhow, those were some of the things that I recall vividly. The first job I had, aside from a lodge,
mm-hmm.
when senior counselors began, that was right after my freshman year of college, so that would have been the summer of 37.
Mm-hmm.
I had the, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the Polecat.
Polecat, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which now has been renamed since the
yes.
two lodges were lost in the fire.
Yeah.
But that was there where the present Falcon is. The same lodge is there, but it's now called Falcon. But, and I forget who my junior counselor was, and I don't remember a lot of the names of the kids, but there's one that's rather interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A little kid named Freddie Levesque.
Oh, yes, I have heard that.
Of Levesque Tower fame, mm-hmm. and who later died untimely in a plane crash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've met his widow in class.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But you knew him at a very early age.
Yes.
Because he must have been about 10, 9
yeah,
or 10.
Yeah, 9 or 10 years old.
Did he come up for a few years then?
I guess so. I'm not as aware of his other years,
yeah,
but I certainly remember him, and very favorably, by the way.
Uh-huh.
He was one of the so-called nice kids. I mean, you
mm-hmm.
know, you could count on him. He was neat and
mm-hmm.
pleasant. Great kid.
Yeah, well, they lived in Bexley, too, you know.
Yes, that's right.
House.
Following year, 38, I think I had the fevers. And mm-hmm. among those in my lives that year was Ed Tullis.
Oh, Ed Tullis.
He's
that's the name, certainly. He was Henry Blau's senior counselor in the Moose.
Was he really?
Back, you know, like 54 or something
is
of that,
that right?
sort. So.
Well, again, give or take a year, it's theoretically possible Ed Tullis was with me in the Polecast, but I
mm-hmm.
thought, I think he was a little older than that. I think
mm-hmm.
he was going to be.
So that was the father coming up. And he, didn't he get, wasn't he involved in academic work at Wittenberg? Or?
Oh, yes. He was
yeah.
president of Wittenberg.
He became president of Wittenberg.
Reese Tullis.
Yeah, Reese.
And a very respected man in the city of Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Marty know him. He's well known for many things.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a fine family. Ed is the youngest of all. He had
mm-hmm.
two older girls, daughters.
I see.
Who lived in Springfield.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've known the Tullis family through Ed and other connections through here.
Sure.
Remember, I'm still New Jerseyite. I don't know
yes.
much about Ohio except what I found out up here. There's a lot of Ohio up here. then the third year I was cast, that would have been the summer of 39, was Pine
mm-hmm.
Creek.
I see. Uh-huh. Now, somewhere along the line, you got to know Ross Miller.
Yeah, that was here.
Right, well, and that was here.
Sure.
And he also, didn't he have the, was he involved with the church in Springfield before you took that church? How
yes,
was that?
Yes, he was. At that time, of course, we called him Dean back then, because
yeah.
he was Dean. He
yeah.
was at Wittenberg College, and he was Lutheran.
Uh-huh.
But during a vacancy of the pulpit of Covenant Presbyterian Church, when their minister had left and they had no pastor and they were looking for one, he
mm-hmm.
supplied the pulpit.
I see.
They knew him. They said, well, he had preached as a guest, I guess, earlier, and they said, hey, let's have mm-hmm. him supply our pulpit while we're looking for a minister. Well, they liked him so well, they finally called him.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a Presbyterian, went through all the ropes, you know, and became a Presbyterian and was pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been in the mid-30s.
Like
then when I got out of seminary, or was about to get out the following spring, I was up here that summer as
mm-hmm.
just a resident then, a guest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we stayed at our cottage by that time. I remember talking to him that summer. I said, Dean, I'm soon going to, we still call him Dean. Uh-huh. I'm going to be getting out of seminary in less than a year. Uh-huh. And my future is before me. And I don't know whether I ought to pick a little church or get on the staff of a large church and learn the ropes through a senior pastor.
Uh-huh.
And he said, Al, I said, I'm not unprejudiced. He said, we're looking for somebody on the staff of Covenant Church right now.
Okay,
and he said, I'm wondering if you'd like to come.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, I had a couple of opportunities in the East, and I thought about that, but really, the pull was too strong.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I said, I'll be there. So I know Morton graduated, and we came out here to Springfield, and I was his assistant pastor.
I see.
Covenant Presbyterian Church.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, then quite unexpectedly, he left that church
uh-huh.
to go back into teaching,
uh-huh.
unexpectedly to me. He may have known that. I didn't know that much ahead. So then I had to decide whether to leave when he did or
uh-huh.
stay on until they got, again, supply the pulpit, until they got an older man as their pastor.
Uh-huh.
And that went on for a year or so.
Uh-huh.
To make a long story short, they finally called me.
Uh-huh.
So I became his successor as pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church. But with a year or two intervening, while it was more or less temporary.
Mm-hmm. So, well, now, you were saying you had your freshman year then around...
of college?
Of college.
My freshman year in college
about
would have been
19,
36, 37.
37.
Fall of 36.
So this must have taken place then, what, about 43?
Yeah, I got out of seminary. I had been in the service, but then
mm-hmm.
I was out of the service and went to seminary on an accelerated program for chaplain's training.
Mm-hmm.
And... got out in 45.
45.
No, 46.
46.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ordained in March of 46,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of weeks later I was in Springfield.
Well, I knew you then as a minister in your earlier professional life.
No doubt.
The vitality that you gave to those Vesper services, and not only Bass Rock, we were talking about that a little earlier, about the 100 or more campers that used to go
yes.
out for the Sunday evening services there, where you could see the sun going down.
I have a picture of that, too, the
mm-hmm.
day I preached. I don't know who took it, somebody
mm-hmm.
in my family, and I still have the picture.
Mm-hmm.
We tried so hard to date it. It could have been 45,
mm-hmm.
although I was going to seminary summers then. I didn't have
mm-hmm.
much time here. I think I did get a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been then. Could have been... Well, no, I don't think it was after I went to Springfield. It must have been during my seminary years I
mm-hmm.
preached that sermon out of Bass
mm-hmm,
Rock.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time I ever did that.
Only one time you did it? Well, I have two pictures of you doing it, too.
On two different occasions?
No. Two different shots.
Oh, yes. I was wearing a white sweater because I have
right.
that other picture at home. I've looked at
right,
that. I can't
right.
date it.
Well, I can
so
tell
unhappy.
You. I can probably pretty much tell you when that was. I'll
well,
look at my slides because
Evan,
I have
can,
them
I'd
by
love
date.
To know.
See, I came in 44. It was my first year.
Oh, it was.
Yes.
Well, then
and
it had to be
so,
after that.
Yes, it was after that, and I'm not sure I brought my camera until around 47 or 48. So you
really?
Must have been up here. I think you
well,
were up
then
here.
I must have been in Springfield.
I think you may have been. You may have just you've been up here for a few weeks. You
okay,
weren't
now,
here.
In 46, I did get a little vacation, but I just started
uh-huh.
at the church, so I didn't have that much of a vacation.
Uh-huh.
I think Gene and I were for a few days.
Uh-huh.
And then in 47, we didn't come at all because that's when Judy was born, right? In the middle
okay.
of the summer, and we just weren't in a position to go anywhere.
So this would have been maybe
so
48.
So it must have been 48.
I think it could have been. You see, I took the little amount that I earned as a junior counselor at about that time, because I was junior counselor in the Eagle Lodge in 48, and so I had earned something the previous
right.
year. And I bought this Bolsey B2, a Swiss-made little camera.
Oh, very good.
And it was at that time I started taking slides. And so it had to be after I bought that camera. That 35mm camera. So I think you probably dated it quite right. It
I'm
probably was 48.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Could we interrupt this just a second?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Talk. Just move along here just for a few more minutes if
yeah,
we have some things. I would Now, getting on with the years then, naturally after your counselorship in the Wildcat, is that?
Junior counselor, that was 36.
36, and then I'm thinking of your senior counselorship in the
Polecat.
That
was Polecat, Beaver, and very clear, Pine Tree.
Pine Tree.
39.
And that was 39.
Did dramatics those years. That was my main job.
Yeah.
A lot of the subsidiary things, as all counselors do, and of course I had the lodge. But then my main job was to put on a play.
Mm-hmm.
I think we put on 6 or 7 plays every year.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's terrific.
Kids memorized the lines, did the whole, did the painted the scenery, did all that stuff.
Terrific.
And some of them were good, some of them were not that good, but we had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, that I think they remember that kind of thing. I know I did, because in the Wildcat, we did that, with Mr. Altmeyer, I got to look that name up. There was a Maurice, from
that's
North High School.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he may have been an associate of Art Kiefer, and so he came up for a number of years in the early to mid 40s and had
is
this.
Is that right?
Had this. So he must have really maybe picked up where
maybe
you left off.
We call them the Footlight Knights.
Uh huh.
We used to do posters and put them up at the inn and all around, and we got quite a few civilians, whatever you want to call them, over to the campus and things like that. And Raymond did the orchestra, and so we kids brought instruments to camp in those years.
Yes, I remember it said, bring your instrument and
you
play.
Yeah, that's right. So we had some memorable plays.
So really, you kind of really got that going, really. Was there much of that going on before you?
No, I succeeded Whit Murphy. Whit Murphy came here with that job for a number of years.
I
sort of got my early training
through
him.
So that's the tradition that
he did a great job. And George Tittman is one of the other things George was active in. He got into that to some degree.
Okay, then what would be your last year as a counselor?
That was it, 39.
39.
Then I graduated from college and went to work for the Newark Evening News, and I didn't get a couple months off in the summer to work. So then the following year, 39, then 40, 42, then I was in the service and didn't get, well, I got here once, got a 10-day leave. Gene and I came up, rained every day. We didn't care. And but then when I was discharged from the service, I went to seminary, and we did get, even though I went summers, we did get a couple of weeks, and we come up here then. Graduated in 46, went to Springfield, did not get here during the season at all in 46, for obvious reasons, although we were here for a few days later. Judy born in 47, so then we started coming back in 48. By this time, Dad had built our camp down here.
Yes.
Pine Hill. That was built in the summer of 41, or the winter of 41, too.
I see.
Their first season was 42.
Now, maybe backing up, now that you mentioned your dad, I remember him, of course, coming over an hour or so before church on Sunday morning and practicing in the rec hall with Raymond and George, and then Art Kiefer was the fourth member of the quartet.
Yes.
And I don't believe we've touched on how your dad knew the Franks. Did we touch
on through that visit with Raymond and that choir that I was telling you about back in the 20s.
All right, that's how he met.
And see, that was two possibilities. Raymond may have been singing with the choir that Dad was in as a guest appearance or something, or through the Doolittles, Mr. Doolittle being the director of the Morristown Presbyterian Church Choir in which Dad sang. I know the Doolittles came here at least 1 year before we did. They were here in 28, stayed at Dummer's Beach. And came back and told Dad all about it, too. So he had either or both of those sources of information about Maine. And with me being asthmatic, and Raymond confirming that there's no asthma in Maine, which is not always the case, we've discovered since, nevertheless, was a big lead. So that's how we got that tie. Then, of course, I met George here. And that was when Ma Frank was here.
Yes.
She lived in a tent then.
Mm-hmm.
Which is right where her cabin is now, the tent. Big tent, Civil War variety.
Yes.
She had a cot in there and made sales and all this.
Now, Bob Corey suggested that Paul Frank
Yep.
Was there too in the early mid-30s.
Sure, I remember Pop. We called Pop or Pop.
I don't remember what you mentioned.
Oh yes, I remember him too.
And then they built that Ma Frank's cabin, which was there when I got here in 44. I suppose that must have been built in the early 40s then.
No, I think, now again, I'm relying on my memory, but as I recall, it was the summer of 35.
Oh,
that was there. As a master camper or whatever I was at that time, I helped put one of the boards into that. Oh. We all kind of rallied around to help build it.
I see.
Was in the building during the summer.
I see.
So that, as I recall, was 35.
Now, was Reverend Sweet the minister? Now, Ross,
he
of course.
He was one of them. And Ross was another.
So during the 30s, those were the
two
major...
Those two men were the key spiritual leaders of the camp. There were others, but they were the main ones. They would preach most often and so on. And we both thought both of them were just great.
So your dad continued in the quartet up into, I think it was during the time I was away. I was in the service in 52 and 53 and had gone to Mexico in 51. So there was a three-year break for me there. Then I was back in 54. But for that time, I don't believe your dad was
I worked out when he still was. He Dad's health declined through the later 50s in any case. And his last summer here, I think, was 59.
I see.
And even then, he didn't feel strong enough to come down the hill and do the steps in our camp. I think he and Mother stayed a week or two in this cabin nearest the inn so they could get around. His legs were failing him. So that was their last summer. So I doubt that he was still doing it even in the mid-50s.
Well, maybe one other thing, before I know time is going by
here.
Yeah,
I do have a couple things I have to tell you.
Oh, please do. Just if you have some thoughts, that's great.
Well, one, and again, I hope this can be verified. I think I was the founder of the wigwam.
Oh, terrific. That is important.
I think so. And again, I would date that to summer of 35.
Okay, that's wonderful.
And I had one young fella helping me, because he was interested in newspaper work too. And that was a fella named Jackie Connard. And the two of us decided we'd do the news, and we were going to make it a private enterprise thing. We were going to make money on this. But I had a working arrangement with the Frank brothers that we could use their equipment in the office to duplicate this thing.
Yeah.
And I paid them so much for the use of their machine. I wanted everything businesslike. Yeah. Then we sold the darn thing. We went around,
entrepreneur.
This is a business. And even took ads. And that is, we could find somebody to put us in. It wasn't much business. But Connor had a little car wash thing he put an ad in. Connor's car wash. Well, anyhow, he and I worked on that thing. And we would distribute it at once a week or so up in the dining hall. And then finally we got permission to use the mailboxes and put it in. Then pretty soon, Ray and or George decided this might be a useful thing for the camp.
Sure.
So they wanted to buy me out.
Terrific.
And I want this on a business. So as I recall, we had a very businesslike negotiation, and I forget whether this was still 35 or the beginning of 36. Anyway, I sold the wigwam to the camp.
That's terrific.
I still worked on it. And I forget who else. It became a much more, with adult help, it became a much more sophisticated thing. We were strictly amateurs, but we both, Connor and I both had an idea we wanted to be newspaper people.
Sure.
Of course, I did start in that professionally. But in any case, that's how the wigwam began, as I recall it.
Oh, I'm sure. That sounds, obviously there must not have been much before that. And,
no, I don't think so.
The name, I'd be interesting.
Right,
was it your name? It was the wigwam, the name wigwam, something that you
called it
up with?
Wigwam from the very beginning. Again, I don't know why exactly. I don't know what led us to that, except this Indian atmosphere.
Sure.
You know. Then the other thing that I think is useful to remember, the old days before the Duke of Zanzibar, I recall the King of Abyssinia. From Z to A, or from A to Z. The King of Abyssinia, however, was much the same, and in terms of what happened.
Yes.
And one vivid recollection is of the late Dr. Joseph Shepherd,
mm-hmm.
who that year, this was 31, I think,
mm-hmm.
was king of Abyssinia.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall his entrance one famous day near the end of the season of 31, during water sports. And he came in, perched on a ladder, which had been tucked under the rear seat of a rowboat,
mm-hmm.
and way out over the stern. And he's
oh,
sitting out there like this, you know, over the over the water,
right.
And he has four guys rowing him.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and he's got shavings from the shop glued on his chest. And various other accoutrements, I don't know what
uh-huh,
all.
Uh-huh.
And they come rowing in around the point in the
uh-huh.
water sports, staying well out of reach of anybody who can get to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, you know, in his mock way, terrorized the camp for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall one day come bursting into the dining hall with one of those big water cooler bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, whoop, 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 and then he'd throw that whole bottle to the counselor. And of course, we kids are sitting there like this. You know?
Oh, sure.
And the custom of chasing the king, or what do you call it, it wasn't established that much yet, but he would stay out of our reach. But that was my introduction to the hijinks that are associated with the Duke.
That's very helpful because Bob Corey, again, like you, having been so associated
yes.
with the camp over the years, got it a little mixed up. He called it the King of Zanzibar. And I thought, that's a strange name.
Yeah.
Because we'd always call it
the Duke of Zanzibar.
See, just momentarily, this is much more accurate, that the king was a term used, but Abyssinia was tied.
That's my record.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
of course,
that's the fun thing about having a number of people share their thoughts.
But the king is right. He was called a king in those days.
And again, it's something that children remember. The Z round, and of course Henry Blau and some of the others took roles in this over the years, and there have been other counselors that took that role and did a very spectacular. I don't know whether anybody recently has done anything as spectacular as even in the 50s.
I don't know. I think there was a year when Bill Watson of Yale
uh-huh.
and Eric Perriman, I think he was Yale too,
uh-huh.
Took the role together.
I see.
So they could really fool the camp, because at one time the king's up here and he's in the midst, and the other time the other's up there, and they couldn't identify this guy.
Couldn't figure out who this was.
And I can remember one time they had some kind of a deal going, and the whole camp was chasing them out of the dining hall.
Uh-huh.
And down from the fort comes a bouncing buggy.
Oh.
Careens past the rec hall, and Watson's up on the roof of the rec hall, and he leaps off the rec hall roof onto the roof of the bouncing buggy and makes his escape.
Sounds like those B-movies I saw.
Oh, that's right.
Back in the
40s. Tell you,
that's
a wild thing. When I was a junior counselor, one night, Johnny Marble and a few others.
I remember hearing Johnny Marble.
Yeah. He's dead. He's dead too.
Is he?
Yes, what a loss. Well, anyway. A few guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
All of us got up, or didn't go to bed, I don't know which, anyway, mm-hmm. midnight or later, sneaked past Ma's cabin, which was always a feat, because
mm-hmm.
Ma never missed a trick, you know, you couldn't touch anything, Ma knew all that. So we pushed and rolled every car and truck in camp out to the athletic field.
Oh my God.
And made a huge semicircle of all these cars and trucks around the diamond.
Totally.
And festooned it all with toilet paper.
Uh-huh.
Got in the office, mimeographed a handbill.
Uh-huh.
All night.
All night.
Distributed them at breakfast the next morning, saying uh-huh. it was a great automobile sale on auction.
Oh.
Right on the athletic field. The whole camp troops out there.
Uh-huh.
And Whit Murphy's one of the leaders in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's auctioning off these cars. His comments on the... And then Stu Smith, with that same hell and damnation I was telling you, he ties the steering wheel so that the wheels are pointing in a circle,
mm-hmm.
starts it going, and he has his car make a big circle out in the outfield.
And, well, that shows a lot
I'll never forget that.
Ingenuity, that's terrific. And of course, young people would never forget something like that, too.
No, they must have remembered it. I certainly did. Well, anyway, those two things are staying on the table.
Right. Well, that's great. Anything else comes up, that's these are very helpful and certainly entertaining to us here and I'm sure to many others. Do you have any particular impressions of G.R. or Florence Frank or Raymond? Or I guess Raymond originally came up as a single fellow.
That's right.
And then
I can remember when he was
married to Franny.
And when Betty was born.
And Betty. I just saw Betty yesterday.
With a bushel basket, driving, reeling Mary down the woodsy trails here.
Are there any particular thoughts, you know, or memories that you have of George or Raymond that maybe would be kind of fun to have for the record about them in any of the activities or any of the semi-emergencies? I mean, now looking back on them, they may be almost humorous, but at the time, perhaps, were kind of unusual crisis types.
I remember some things. Of course, there were general impressions. We always felt as kids that Raymond was the sterner of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Although there were times when we would also say, though, if you wanted a real favor, the man to go to is Raymond. So I don't know. But I remember George was always rather brusque and very abrupt. You remember how George
was.
And Raymond was quieter.
Yeah.
But both were strong on discipline.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't fool around.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Of course, I remember Raymond's piano playing.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't forget that. And George's, and both of their singing, I remember that. They didn't participate a great deal in camp activities, as you know. They directed the camp,
mm-hmm.
and let the counselors do the leadership. And, I do remember when the camp finally got a fine motorboat, I think it was Chris Craft.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, and may the saints preserve me if this is wrong, I think George drove it out onto Dee Dee Rock, first
mm-hmm.
trip.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard that, I don't know.
I think I have heard, Mahogany crisscross.
Right smack into that rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all watching because it was a big day in camp, mm-hmm. this beautiful boat, you know, and it didn't go, what was it, 75 yards? Bang! And I can remember George calling in, "We need help out here." And you know, they went out and got it. And there I have a vivid memory. It was such a shock to him.
Yeah.
I remember his lying down on the cot in Bob Frank's cabin.
Mm-hmm.
It just knocked him out.
Sure.
He was so terrible at that. And of course, I don't blame him. That was an awful experience. The whole camp watching it.
Yeah.
Right.
He's kind of a perfectionist himself and done so much.
I really felt sorry for him.
Sure.
Even though in later years we laughed about the incident,
still.
But I do remember what a blow it was.
Mm-hmm,
George.
Mm-hmm.
I also remember George took a real interest in kids. One of the things I mentioned after his death when we had the memorial service out here was his coming to me one time concerned about my health. I was a mm-hmm. skinny little kid, you know, and mm-hmm. underweight. And I remember the lodge was going up to Cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a disappointment to me at the time. He said, "Al, I don't think you should go on that trip."
Mm-hmm.
He kept me home from it. Of course, I was resentful at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of it now as a kind of personal supervision that directors gave to the individual kids in the
mm-hmm.
camp.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was underweight, perhaps, and they didn't feel I was strong enough for Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
I've always regretted it from the point of view of I never did get up that mountain.
Yeah.
There's one mountain I haven't climbed in Maine, sorry to say. But anyway, that was one of the recollections.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, well, I think, it's interesting that you bring up that, because I think in thinking back in my own experiences and with others, that George did have this ability to become very interested in every single boy that he brought up in particular, but even some of Raymond's boys. But they each took a very personal feeling towards them, and if they were a little glum, they'd go to the senior counselor and say, you know, why is Harry seems a little, has he been homesick? Has he been riding home properly? Has he been eating well?
Yeah, they followed up, and they would come up to you, you know, put their arm around you, how's it going?
Oh, yes, George, I know. He, as I recall, in the 40s and in the 50s, was the inspector on the senior side of the camp,
really?
I believe. And, of course, then he would have even more direct contact continually. I can't remember. I don't think Raymond took the other side. They could have both each taken their side of camp for a while. you know, during, and then I began being the inspector. George turned that over to me, and I became the inspector.
Yeah. I think in the days I was there, I think it was Dean Miller did
that. Dean may have done that. Yeah, a lot of these important things. What about Chief Marshall? Are there any impressions that we'd want to maybe get on the record for Chief?
Oh, yes,
I don't want to divert you from Raymond, though, if you have some
other... No, I think it's hard to pin that down. We've respected both of them at all times, and, you know, the usual boyish criticism of leaders had to take a stand against what you were trying to do, but that would be important. That's necessary discipline. We needed that sort of thing. So I've always respected both of them, and I think they did a great job, really. That is not whitewash. I really do think they were fine men. Chief Marshall's another one. We all respected him. I remember him better during my counselor years. And one of the great sayings was about Chief was when he conducted counselor's meetings on Sunday after church. His famous saying always was, any farther business? We used to kid him about that.
Yeah, that was his
And
phrase.
I think when Cam Scarlett was doing the log, he said H.C. Marshall stood for hyper clipboard. Our old chief used to go around the clipboard. And
I
knew
that
came in his head,
that.
You know, and we called him hyper clipboard. But he was always well liked, and he played tennis really until his later years.
Yes.
We used to kid him on that, too, because sometimes we'd say he missed a call from his own side. Just out, he'd say. The guy just going, what do you mean, Mr. He'd say, just out. So that got to be a saying, too.
He liked to climb mountains, too, didn't he? Years, I know, when he was getting older. I interviewed him once in Columbus. And after changing the tape on the recorder, just talking a little bit about Chief Marshall and his background, and I was just mentioning that beginning to write my master's dissertation in education at Ohio State, I talked with GR, and he had been in the building where the first junior high school was founded in 1910.
Oh, is that
just
so?
Just off the campus of Ohio State.
Well.
Oakland, California vies for that honor at the same year of starting the formal junior high school, but Ohio State, most scholars give credit to Ohio State, in the top of an elementary school on the second floor.
Yeah.
And one of the concepts was to give junior high school age children the opportunity to work with wood and to have a shop. So, of course, that was George's forte. And so anyway, I just thinking in terms of having talked with Chief about his concepts of discipline and how he, as a principal in one of the junior high schools, utilized the students with student aides sitting at desks out in the halls and having students check in if they were having a pass to go to the restroom or to go to the office. And his concept of bringing democracy to the junior high school and having the students determine the
much about that
government.
Part of his career.
And so I don't know where I can locate those tapes or not. My old mentor retired about 3 or 4 years ago from from his job at Ohio State, and I'm hoping to maybe see whether those possibly even around. But these were recorded 30 years ago, you know. So it may not be around. But getting back then to Kwani here, just thinking of any other thoughts that you might want to share with us as far as names of individuals. You've been coming back practically every year now since the late 40s and have continued. I don't know about this year, but frequently you've given talks at Sunday.
Preached occasionally, and in the early days when they were still a singing camp, I'd lead singing sometimes when we were up here at campfire and stuff like that.
Well, and of course your...
college songs, you know.
Yes. Yeah. We'd hope to see you do that again. Of course, it'd bring back wonderful memories to me because I remember you were playing the drums and R.C. Playing the piano and so forth.
He used to take the drumsticks and go all over the front of the
playing
with them. We'd drum on a chair with all the drums and stuff, and then along the stage floor and up on the piano.
Right. I have pictures of you doing that,
too. And on the heads of the kids out in the front, you know, all this kind of stuff.
You have a picture of that? I have a picture.
No, I've never
seen a picture
of you
at the drums. I'll look for that.
I would love just to cherish it as a keepsake.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
right,
if you think you get a print of it for me, I'd
love sure. I'm sure I do. I do remember that too. Right. You had that hat on. You know, used to play. Have a certain hat.
I guess
that?
I did. Yeah, I was big on hats. I still am. You ask my family.
Well, that's wonderful. I just might, in closing, just say that, of course, Judy, having married Chuck Uphine, and I was instrumental in getting Chuck up here, as you may or may not know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
My dad worked with Mr. O'Neill.
Oh, yes.
You said,
7 Up?
7 Up.
Sure.
And, that's right. And Chuck's dad was Mr. O'Neill's right-hand guy.
Yes,
you know,
that's right.
His lieutenant. And so Dad got to know both Mr. O'Neill well and Mr. Huffine. And so working with GR, I said, well, maybe I'll go over and see the Huffines and see whether their boy Chuck would like to come up to Kiwanee.
Yep.
So it was Chuck coming up, and then later on he became my assistant in boating, and then took over boating after I got involved with other things away from the campus.
Yeah.
So,
and Judy met him here.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And my other daughter met Bill Albersart here.
Yes, that's right.
They're both Columbusites.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's why Judy lives in Columbus now. And of course, that's why we moved to Columbus, see the grandchildren grow up.
I see.
The other daughter, though, did not. They live in Maryland. Mm-hmm. She and Bill Albersart, but they're Columbus people. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's wonderful. I guess, as you were suggesting earlier this morning before church, that if Jean were here, she might have jabbed a few more memories.
Well,
but I certainly remember seeing Jean with you. Ever
yeah,
since
really
I
matter.
Knew you, because you were probably married at about what time?
Married 41.
41. So
and let me think. Yeah, I had I was with the North News then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I had 2 weeks vacation, so we were here. Mm-hmm. Came up sort of a belated honeymoon. We were married in April, but we came up here in the summer.
That's exactly what we
two
did.
2 weeks.
Exactly.
Did you?
We did. Mary and I were married in April.
Really, Mary?
We just had the weekend. She was teaching.
Oh, boy.
And so we went to New York for 2 days, but we said the real honeymoon will be coming up to
same
camp.
Same with us. We
and
had 2
Mary,
days. Went to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, right. Same thing.
Yeah.
Mary became the camp secretary.
Oh, did you? Were you camp secretary then, Mary?
1960.
You don't say. Well, I was here that year. Bad to find out.
And Fergie's wife was the other half of the secretarial
group. Oh, my God.
So, anyway. Well, it's been wonderful talking with you.
It's been great because I value the whole project. I think it's the life was being done. And if I can think of important things, I'll either tell them to you before either of us goes home or I'll drop them to you in the mail. Put a little paragraph or two down. But those are the outstanding ones. Now, of course, you can talk for hours about what it's meant in terms of character, in terms of what happened to me as a kid and as a young man, and so on, and how important it has been. I just value this camp tremendously from the personal point of view.
Yes, and I was so pleased. Of course, John just sitting in with us here, I was so pleased that he was able to participate in camp over a number of years.
Right. Oh, what were your years here, John?
I came in 73,
yep.
And then in 74, and then 76 and 77.
Right.
78, I was a junior counselor under Bill Albersart in Eagle Lodge.
Oh, you knew Bill then. Okay, well, he's my son-in-law.
Generations passed.
That's right. Oh, you were. Well.
So, he and I finished up the season on the stage in the rec hall in 78.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And, that was it.
You didn't come since after that. You were a senior counselor.
Yeah, no, I was a senior counselor See, it'd be 78 and then maybe 79. I was a senior counselor in Beaver Lodge. That must have been the year after that in 79.
Right.
And that was my last year.
Yeah, yeah, you worked with Peter.
And I worked with Peter.
Oh,
I was down in swimming.
Yeah, yeah, but great outings. The ties just continue to deepen.
Well, thanks a lot.
Well, it's my pleasure.
And.